Hey, welcome to Your Turn, Mike Kozy. Glad to have you with us. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. And remember, our shows are archived on our homepage. So if you miss this one or miss portions of it or want to hear it again, you can just go to our homepage and get it. And a very interesting guest this morning, very timely guest, Arthur Stein. He is a financial planner in the Washington area, and we'll give you some particulars about him. But we're going to be talking about a variety of things. The Federal Thrift Savings Plan, the stock market has been going great guns up until the other day when they had the hits in Europe and the bombing in Boston and whatnot. It seems to have damaged things a little bit, but we're talking about that. But I want to get to the chained COLA, the chained CPI, which sounds like a 1950s porn movie or book, the chained CPI. But in fact, it's very important. It's something that would touch about one in every six people in the United States currently, and eventually it would touch everyone, every one of you out there, myself included. It has to do with Social Security, with civil service retirement, and with military retired pay. But Arthur Stein is my guest. Arthur, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming down from Rockville. And would you give us some of your background, because it's a very interesting one, I know.
Yeah, I'm a financial planner. I'm a certified financial planner. My office is in Bethesda. And I've been a financial planner for way more than 20 years. Before that, I was an economist. I have a bachelor's and a master's in economics. And I worked in Botswana for 2 years, an economist for their government, taught in Australia. And then I spent 5 years on the House Ways and Means Committee as a staff economist on the House Ways and Means Committee.
So you've really been around it. I know very few people who've worked in Botswana. So
no, you don't know a lot of people who've worked in Botswana, but it actually was a wonderful place to
sure.
work.
And you have been a Fed briefly, too, when you were on the
Hill. Yeah, I was
so
on the Ways and Means Committee.
About that. This change CPI, can you explain, A, what it is, what would be different, and then we'll talk about the impact.
Okay, the importance of the consumer price index, well, there are a lot of reasons, but it's the inflation rate. Specifically, what we're speaking about now, though, is that Social Security payments and the federal annuity, the federal pension, have a cost of living adjustment, which means that they go up each year as inflation increases prices. And that's a very important part of both those retirement income streams. Currently, both Social Security and the federal annuity are adjusted by what's called CPIW, which is a consumer price index for all urban wage earners. And the proposal in President Obama's budget for 2014 is to change the cost of living adjustment for both of those retirement incomes to what's called the chained CPI, which, as you said, is C-CPI-U, I think.
Yeah.
And the reason they're doing this is to save money. It does not go up as quickly as the CPIW they're currently using, which means that retirees in the future will receive, less in retirement benefits. And my website is arthursteinfinancial.com. I have a blog. And on my blog, my most recent blog, was an article that explained exactly how much this would affect those payments. And, excuse me, basically, over a 10-year retirement, someone would receive 1.3% less in payments. Over a 20-year retirement, they would receive 2.8% less in payments, and over a 30-year retirement, someone would receive 4.3% less in total payments. Now, that's something that if you have a lot of money invested in the TSP and maybe investments outside the TSP, those might not bother you very much. If you're completely living on your federal annuity and or maybe your federal annuity and Social Security, then that could be very painful because it's going to mean that you have to reduce your expenditures by those amounts.
When I was doing the column about it, I wanted to use the analogy of you put a lobster in cold water, turn the heat up, and you slowly boil them, and the lobster apparently doesn't know what's happening until it's too late. But as somebody who cooks lobster frequently says, that's not the way you do it. So I didn't use that example. But in this case, if they changed it and went to the chain CPI, there'd be a hue and cry from people about it. But over time, people wouldn't know that they were getting less, would they?
Exactly. I agree with that. Yeah. Once it goes into effect, people aren't going to notice probably very much, except some people are just going to know that it's even harder to pay their expenses than they thought it was going to be. And, you know, this is especially important, I think, to FERS employees, because their annuity, even with Social Security, was probably never going to pay for all of their retirement. CSRS employees who work for the federal government for, you know, a long period of time, you know, many of them are retiring with annuities that are 60 to 80% of their previous income. And
fully indexed to inflation.
Fully indexed to inflation. And, of course, lots of people move to a cheaper area. They they probably don't have to worry about it. They have a cushion. But FERS employees, even without this, they're not fully indexed to inflation if inflation's more than 2%. And so they always had to depend upon their investments, to expect to depend upon their investments at some time in the future. And I would say this just means that they're going to have to depend upon their investments even more.
Yeah, and that's an important point. I remember back when they were talking about changing from the old civil service retirement system and replacing it with the FERS, the Federal Employees Retirement System. I remember an economist at the time who worked on it. He said 20, 30 years down the road, he said civil service retirees, the people under the CSRS system, which is fully indexed to inflation, he said they will be the most affluent people in most of their communities, their retirement communities, because of this. They'll be much, much better off than people who'd spent the same amount of time working under Social Security-covered employment, and especially for companies, half of which don't offer pensions. So,
absolutely.
So that's a factor.
And I would say this. I mean, the CSRS people have a great deal. But, you know, I want to emphasize that, you know, FERS employees still have a great deal compared to the rest of America.
Yeah, it is, and I think people forget that. The Employee Benefits Research Institute, I called them one time and I said, how many companies in the country have pensions that are indexed to inflation? And they said none.
None?
None.
Wow.
Which is a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Except
none's
for the federal
number.
Government and some state and local governments, but as far as private sector people. And of those, less than half now offer pensions. So, you know, it's a relative thing. But this would be, as you say, if somebody under the chain CPI, somebody who worked or who had been retired for 10 years, their annuity would be 1.3% less than it would have been under the current system. And by the time they get to, 30 years, it would be 4.3% less.
Yeah.
Which could be significant.
Total payments would be about 4% less.
And I,
for some people, that's going to be very significant. I think what your listeners, one thing I would take away from this is, they really need to look at how much they're investing, and they want to make sure that their investments are going to increase their purchasing power, and they want to be careful about when they retire, because if this is enacted, it's going to mean that, you know, they're going to be getting less from Social Security and their federal annuity than they otherwise would have, and they're going to need to compensate. And they're lucky because they're able to compensate. I mean, one of the great benefits that federal employees have, and I'm sure this is not true of 100% of federal employees, but most federal employees are able to delay their retirement if they want. And for many people, working an extra year would make up for, you know, any of this loss.
I want to ask you about investing for the future, but we've got to take a short break here on 1500 AM Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey, and I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He's a certified financial planner, worked on the Hill of the House Ways and Means Committee, taught at university in Australia, which I think is fascinating. And I think you're the only person I know who's worked in Botswana, made a living in Botswana. Well done. We're talking about the chain CPI, which is not a naughty book from the 1950s, but it would be a new measure of inflation, a new way to measure inflation. And Arthur's done the math, crunched the numbers, and he said that after 10 years under this new system, your Social Security, civil service retirement, or military retired pay would be about 1.3% less than it would under the current system. And over a 30-year period, it would be reduced 4.3%. By then, you wouldn't know it. It would be the norm, but it would be that much less income for you to have in retirement. A lot of people think it's fairer, a fairer system, because they say it takes into account the fact that when prices get high, people adjust and go to other products. But you could make that argument all day. But the bottom line is it would not help retirees.
It would not help retirees. It might be a more accurate way to gauge inflation. But it's going to hurt. They're not doing it for that reason. I mean, one is trying to say they're doing it for
not
that
an
reason.
Equity thing. Yeah.
They're doing it because it reduces expenditures and we're in a budget crisis. And the other aspect of President Obama's proposal is to use the same chain CPI to adjust the various parts of the tax code that are indexed for inflation, like brackets are indexed for inflation, the personal exemption, various other parts of the tax code. That also helps the budget because they would be going up more slowly, which would result in higher taxable income for people, which is going to result in higher tax revenue. Now, if they do both those things, they use this chain CPI to adjust the tax code, all parts of it, including the estate tax, and they use it to adjust Social Security and federal pensions. I would say it's a balanced proposal. But if they end up just using it to adjust pensions and Social Security and not the tax code, then to me it's just something that, you know, hurts the poor a lot more than the rich, and it's not balanced and maybe not fair either.
Right, because as the way the president presented it, it's a compromise, if you will. The Republicans want to cut entitlements. The Democrats want to raise taxes. So this would do both,
as you say,
if it was taken in toto. But given the lobby, the tax people, it probably won't be done that way.
Who knows what they're going to do? I mean, no one, you know, as a former staff member in the Ways and Means Committee, I can say with complete certainty that nobody knows what Congress is going to do. And occasionally, Mike, they even do the right thing.
Yeah, well,
that happens.
Fortunately, less and less all the time. You were talking about investing and people who invest, or they need to invest for retirement. Even if you have the best system in the country, which is the CSRS or arguably FERS, I remember again when they were setting these up, people said, if you're under the civil service retirement system, which is about 200,000 current workers and virtually all retirees, if you're under CSRS, they said you didn't really need the thrift savings plan. It would be great and you should use it, but it was not essential. But if you were under FERS, which is the vast majority of people working today and the vast majority of retirees in future, it's essential. Because it's the third leg of the thing. You get a government pension, an annuity that's about half of what you would get under the old system, CSRS. So you get that. You get Social Security, which you pay into. And then the third leg of that milking stool is the thrift savings plan. I mean, how important is it?
I agree with you, Mike. For FERS employees, it's essential that people put money in the thrift savings plan. Fortunately, they have a 5% match, which is incredibly generous. So even people who just put in 5% get the 5% match, or at least doing investing 10%. And if they did that their whole career and they had a long career, that wouldn't be bad. But even better to max out your contributions to the TSP. But the other thing that's important to do is to invest it appropriately, and you want your long-term investments to be in something that over long periods of time has a chance to increase your purchasing power after subtracting out taxes and inflation. Maybe the most popular of the TSP funds is the G fund, which is kind of a savings account on steroids.
Yeah.
It's a savings account with a fabulous interest rate and guaranteed by the government, doesn't fluctuate in values. And many people invest in that because they consider it to be quote-unquote safe. It's safe in the sense it's not going to fluctuate in value, but it's also your purchasing power of funds invested in the TSP goes down over time. And it means that if you leave the money in there for a long period of time, when you get ready to take it out and spend it, it's going to be worth less than it was when you put it in. And that's a hard way to make money. You know, I mean, it's you're putting the money in there because you need to take it out and spend it. And, you know, we've gone through some really tough years with the stock market, but we have returned to a point which is historically more normal, which is the TSP funds that invest in stocks. And this is the C fund, the S fund, and the I fund. Over the last 10 years, have substantially outperformed the G fund, and they substantially outperformed the F fund, which invests in bonds. Now, they fluctuated a lot more, you know, than those
yeah.
other two funds did, but they still ended up with a higher rate of return. And that's why, you know, lots of financial planners, myself included, recommend that people keep a substantial portion of their investments in stocks throughout their retirement.
I'm reminded of the movie and the book Marathon Man, where the mad doctor, actually mad dentist, the Nazi, is going to torture somebody by pulling out their teeth. And he keeps saying, is it safe? He's looking for a treasure. But is it safe is a relative term, isn't it? Because, as you said, the G fund never has a bad day. On the other hand, it never has a very, really good one either. And over time, it's steady, but steady is not necessarily what you want. And if you look at the target funds, the life cycle funds, they're balanced in such a way that even if you're on a present income situation, meaning you're elderly and you're retired and living on your pension and your TSP, they still have a substantial amount of money in the stock market, don't they?
Yeah. You know, I do, when I speak to federal employees, one of the examples I do is how many first class stamps could you purchase with interest from the G fund? And I use first class stamps because it purchases exactly the same service year after year after year. And they tend to go up around the same rate as inflation. So, you know, in 1993, you could purchase 21 stamps with the interest from the G fund. In 2012, you could only purchase 3 stamps with the interest from the G fund, a $100 investment in the G fund. That's about an 85% reduction in purchasing power, the interest from the G fund over a 20-year period. Pretty dramatic.
A financial planner that I knew used to recommend that people, in fact, he is part of his show, his presentation. He had those cards and it shows, you know, the wonderful year 1957. The favorite song was a Chevrolet cost this, gasoline was this. But he said, keep those around and look at it and look at the first year you started working. Whatever that year was, look at one of those cards and see what a house cost, see what a steak cost, see what this cost, mm-hmm. and then project it. You're working for 30 years, and then you retire. Project that 20 or 30 years in the future, and you see what you're talking about,
yeah.
the erosion factor.
And so you have to fight that erosion because when you need the money in retirement, you know, let's face it, even when you retire, some of your investments you're not going to be tapping into for 10, 20, 30 years. You retire at 65. Some of your investments you're going to be needing when you're 85 and 90 and 95. You know, it's a very long period of time, and it's over long period of times that historically stocks have outperformed bonds.
Yeah.
Now, past performance, no guarantee of future performance, but there's a reason that has occurred. You know, interest rates in the United States do not tend to go up over time, but prices do.
And I've heard that the best time to have ever bought stocks in the U.S. was 1931, 32, during that Great Depression when they were on sale.
Yeah, but, you know, it's important to say, Mike, it's great if you buy at the bottom. But even if you buy at the top, if you wait long enough, stocks have been a good investment, great
yeah.
investment. You know, so you don't have to time your investments. And, of course, if you're working and you're investing every 2 weeks in the TSP through an automatic withdrawal, that's an easy way to invest in stocks. And, you know, any two-week investment is small compared to your total investment.
And the government
time.
Is dollar-cost averaging for you, right?
Yeah, the government is dollar-cost averaging. They're matching. I mean, it's
good
a
deal.
Great deal.
Short break here on WFED 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey. I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He's a certified financial planner in Bethesda and also worked on the House Ways and Means Committee, taught in Australia, had a very interesting career, and now he's doing financial planning out of Bethesda. Arthur, I want to ask you something. A friend of mine was a government worker, then she became a business executive, then she came back into government, moved her 401k plan from the corporation into the TSP, which I think was a very good move. But when the crisis, the financial crisis hit, she was one of those sleep at night victims. She said, "I can't take this." Seeing her 401k diminish every 2 weeks, even though she was putting money into it. So she moved into the G fund. And I assume she stayed there. And now that with the market has come roaring back, she is in bad shape compared to somebody who stayed the course and kept buying, I would assume, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem with trying to time the market or reacting emotionally after it's gone down, is you're selling after the market went down, and then it never seems like a good time to get back in the market. Even if you sell before the market goes down, you put yourself in a very bad situation because you have to buy back in order for that strategy to work out for you. Historically, it's always been a better strategy just to keep investing, keep your money in the market, and let it go back up. And, you know, from the market bottom, then the market went up about over 100%, and so many people sold out and missed that increase, and so they lost money when they sold and they never gained it back. It's just not a good situation. And that's why it's important to realize, you know, that now over the last 10 years through the end of 2012, even with this horrible 2008 stock market crash, stocks still outperformed the G fund, still outperformed the bond fund that's in the TSP called the F fund. And so people who just held on did better than those who sold at the bottom and stayed out, a lot better.
Yeah, well, that's one of those things, and it's so hard to tell people. But I heard another financial planner talk. Timing the market, he said, is akin to you're on a ship in heavy seas that's pitching and rolling, and you're going to jump into another ship, and you have to be right twice.
Yeah.
You have to leave at the right time and arrive at the right time. And that's
absolutely. It's just not a good idea, and it's something even professionals don't do well. Buy and hold has always been a better strategy if you're in a diversified portfolio. And, of course, the great thing about, like, for instance, buying the C fund and the TSP is you then own 500 different companies. And the S fund, I think they own about 1,500 different companies.
It's the rest of the market, isn't it?
It's the rest of the market, basically. The I fund owns hundreds of different companies. So you have enormous amounts of diversification. And then you're just doing it because you're hoping and expecting that in the future the market will continue to do well. There's no guarantee it will, but there's certainly no guarantee that the F fund will continue to do well. And we already see that, you know, like the G fund last year was up 1.5%, which sounds good until you factor in that inflation was 1.7%. So you lost purchasing power on the G fund last year. And when you take the money out of the TSP, you're going to pay taxes. And so then you're going to lose even more money. I mean, how are you going to support yourself on that? This is the point. You putting this money in to support yourself in retirement, it means you need to invest that have the potential to increase your purchasing power.
And those target income funds do just that in the federal program. You're shaking your head.
But, I'm shaking my head.
Yeah. But I mean, the idea is even the safest, quote, safest one has stocks in it.
The safest one is, so
President
now we're
income?
Talking, yeah, these target date retirement funds, the L funds and the TSP. When they start, they have 80% in the stock funds and 20% in the F and G fund. When they hit their target date, they become the L income fund. Then they have 80% in the G and F fund, and actually it's mainly the G fund. I think it's like 72% G and 8% F, the other 20% in the stock funds. The problem with that is, yeah, you're losing purchasing power on, you know, 72% of your portfolio. How can you afford that? There's also never been any studies that show that in retirement, having 80% in bonds and savings accounts is going to generate more income than having, you know, more than 50% in stocks over long periods of time. Historically, we're not guaranteeing anything here, folks, but there's no evidence that that's going to work out better.
Well, I remember you didn't like that. What about instead of having the present income fund, which assumes you're retired and you're drawing on the money, what about buying one that's, say, like the 2020 fund for the year 2020 or even 2030? So that's getting you a richer mix of stocks. Would that be a better way to do it?
Yeah, well, you know, keep in mind, and one mistake people make with this is they think that, well, gee, if I retire at 65 and that's in 2040, I'll get the 2040 fund. Well, actually, you want that fund to hit its target date when you need to start withdrawing the money.
Yeah.
And many feds are going to be able to live on their, you know, annuity and maybe Social Security for years after they retire. I mean, clearly true with CSRS employees, hopefully true with FERS employees. So you want to, you know, match up that target date fund to the year when you start withdrawing the money. Expect to start withdrawing the money.
Yeah, which for feds often is 10, 20 years later. And in some cases, they never withdraw it. It's a legacy for their kids. Arthur, would you give your website again?
Yeah, it's arthursteinfinancial.com, A-R-T-H-U-R-S-T-E-I-N. The word financial.com.
And I think in my column, the Federal Report, I think it's linked to your blog. But if not, people can get to your blog and understand that what this change CPI is and how it would work and the damage it would do long term. Okay.
Absolutely. That would be great.
Good deal. Okay. And one other thing. Some years back, there was this great push, lobbyists from various groups, REITs, the real estate investment trust funds. They lobbied very hard for 10 years to get into the thrift savings plan. There were people who wanted a gold fund, which up until last week looks like a good idea. And all of these different things. What do you think about these specialized funds coming into the TSP?
I like the TSP because they kept it simple. You know, it's got five basic choices plus the L funds. And it doesn't tempt people to try and switch back and forth. The more narrow the choice that you give people, the more likely they are to switch into it after it's done well, which is buying high and to get disgusted with it and sell when it's done poorly. And it's also, you know, Mike, as you said, there are lobbyists working on this.
Yeah.
They're not working on getting these included because they think it's going to be great for federal employees. They're doing it because they represent the real estate industry, trying to get real estate funds in there. They represent the gold industry, trying to get a gold fund in there. Real estate is actually something that when I manage investments for people, which I do, we try and have a real estate investment trust component, which is a type of mutual fund that invests in real estate. I would never put them in gold. It's historically has not been a good investment unless you happen to buy at the right time and sell at the right time. It's wildly speculative. People don't really need it. Gold peaked about 12 or 18 months ago. It's now down about more than 20%. It went down 16% in 1 week. And the problem with gold is that, demand for gold jewelry is 40% lower than it was in 1997. There's not a big increase in demand for technology and medical uses of gold. And the rest of it is just speculation running on fear and greed.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you very much, Arthur Stein, for being here with us.
Thank you, Mike.
We'll get you back, and we will link to your blog and your website in the column. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. And Lauren Larson is in there manning the board and watching our time. And my next guest is Steve Losey, a senior writer with Federal Times. Steve, you with us?
I'm here. How are you, Mike?
Hey, fine. Thank you. Thanks for hanging on. Listen, I thought before we start get into the nuts and bolts of things and the nitty-gritty, a word about the Boston situation. I was flying over the weekend, and it was interesting. When I flew out of D.C., there was a lot of people complaining about airport security and the screeners and all that. And coming back, I didn't hear anybody complaining about the security or the long lines or the screening. And I even got patted down for my efforts. But it is fascinating how a national shock like this will kind of bring us back to reality, the new world. And when you think about a lot of people who are in high school today, and even college, were 3, 4, 5 years old when 9/11 happened. And for them, it's Pearl Harbor or the Kennedy assassination to a lot of us. But now this Boston thing brings it home, and you see that. And there were some wonderful people that helped out, civilians, but by and large, the first responders were federal, state, and local people.
That's right. And I think your point is definitely well made. And I think the fact that what happened, the tragedy that happened, was so public and so, you know, so well photographed and so well filmed that it's the kind of thing we haven't really seen in many years, in more than a decade, as you pointed out, since 9/11. So, yeah. And I think there's been a lot of those photographs of the just the carnage, but I think the photograph that keeps hitting home for me is the one of the Boston PD officer standing over the, I believe, 78-year-old runner who was knocked off his feet. And I just keep coming back to that one and just being amazed.
Yeah, that's the iconic picture. Well, you know, another thing, somebody was saying with photos and, you know, cameras and telephones and whatnot, now everybody is an amateur detective and technician and photographer. But one of the things they did was Customs and the ATF and other federal agencies. Apparently they were met at Logan Airport in Boston that evening and the next day, and when tourists who had come to Boston for the marathon, either to run or to watch it, they were downloading their cell phones to try to get footage, and that may be one of the ways they capture who this person or people were that planted these bombs. And yeah, that's a fascinating world that most of us don't think about.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I wonder if one of the big breaks in this case does come from that, because I mean, these days of iPhones and smartphones, everyone's got a HD quality video camera in their pocket. I mean, you think about 9/11, like we just happened to have footage of that very first plane hitting because there was a documentary crew at the World Trade Center that day, just by coincidence. And, you know, I think there's probably a very good chance that somewhere, somehow, there's footage or a photo of the heinous person who did this, and it's just a matter of combing through these just gigabytes of data to try to find it.
And you know the government is doing that, and they're also finding out where those people were standing when they took their photographs.
It's like the Zapruder film times, you know, a million.
Exactly. Well, good. We live in interesting times, as they say. Back to the more mundane. The president's budget, 1% pay raise, and the chained COLA. Chain CPI. What about that?
Yeah, the 1% pay raise is kind of the spoonful of sugar that make it, that the president is hoping makes a lot of medicine go down. We'll first start with that, the pay raise. As you said, 1%, it would break if it is approved, and who knows, that's far from a certainty. If it is approved, it would break the 3-year pay scale freeze that federal employees are now under. That 3-year freeze is kind of unprecedented in the 6-decade-plus history of the general schedule. So federal employees, their pay scales have stayed the same. It would increase by 1% under Obama's proposal. However, there's a lot in there that is really angering federal employees and the groups, the unions and other groups who represent them. As you said, the chain CPI proposal, which is kind of a technical change that gets wrapped up in a lot of technical gobbledygook, that would actually have a very significant impact on the lives of federal retirees. This is a change to how interest rates are calculated. It's a lower, a less generous form of inflation that supporters say is more accurate than the current method. It would lower interest rates by anywhere from a quarter percentage point to 0.3 tenths of a percentage point, which doesn't sound like much. And at first, it wouldn't be much. You know, after 5 years or so, if you got a $30,000 pension, if chain CPI was in effect, your COLAs would be reduced by about not just shy of $1,500. That's cumulative over 5 years. But because of the principles of compound interest, and it would increase over the years. By my calculations, after 15 years, you'd be, receive $14,000 less. 20 years, $27,000 less. If you happen to live 30 years after you retire, and you start out with a $30,000 pension, if chain CPI were in effect, you would lose $73,000. So it's something that kind of burrows in there and keeps hitting federal retirees year after year after year until the overall compound impact is quite significant.
Right. We always think of compounding as going up, compound interest, but it can compound in the negative as well.
Yeah, double-edged sword.
Yeah, very interesting. I noticed you were very careful to say federal pay scales have not changed, because I remember some months back, and you guys had a story, and we discussed it, about the fact that while there has been a pay freeze, federal pay has gone up.
That's right. The latest report from the Office of Personnel Management containing statistics on federal pay came out last week, and it showed that over the between 2011 and 2012, federal pay, the average federal salary went up just shy of $1,000, and that is, of course, much less than the increase was in the pre-pay freeze years. But it does show that some federal employees are getting raises due to step increases, due to promotions, things like that.
Yeah.
When I point that out, I don't mean to minimize
exactly
what federal employees have been operating under. It's not easy, but it is something that should be noted.
Right. And technically, it's not a pay freeze, because pay is going up, but the pay scales are frozen, which is a big difference.
That's why we've been using that terminology.
Yeah.
There's a few other things in the Obama budget that are worth noting and that would hit federal employees in their pockets very quickly. The budget contains a proposal to increase the retirement contributions for federal employees by 1.2 percentage points. This would be phased in over 3 years. So most federal employees who are FERS employees, right now they pay 0.8% of each paycheck towards their pensions. This would increase that when all is said and done to 2%. CSRS employees would go from 7% to 8.2%. Now, newly hired federal employees have already had their retirement contributions increased as part of a deal struck last year to extend unemployment benefits. This would not affect them, but they're already paying a good chunk more than current FERS employees are. So this is something that would essentially, after the 3-year phase-in period, would essentially wipe out that 1% pay raise that President Obama has proposed, which is something that's really angering federal unions, federal employee groups. Bill Dugan, the head of the National Federation of Federal Employees, he said that Washington has abandoned federal employees, and he said the quote he delivered was, with friends like this, who needs enemies? And Colleen Kelly, the president of NTEU, National Treasury Employees Union, said a 1% raise is just flat-out inadequate after the three-year pay freeze. One last thing that I'd like to point out is the FERS supplement, which replaces – which is the amount of Social Security for federal employees who retire before they hit age 62 and thus become eligible for Social Security. President Obama's budget would do away with the FERS annuity supplement. So that's another hit to federal employees tucked into this budget.
And those are two of the biggest hits that federal and retiree groups have warned us about over the years is the change CPI and then the eliminating the FERS supplement, which most people haven't paid attention to.
That's right. That's right. And it's something that because Republicans, especially Republicans in the House, have been proposing even steeper cuts to federal benefits, such as a roughly 5%.
We've run into the wire. Steve, thank you very much. Thanks, Lauren. And we'll see you all back here Wednesday. Remember, our shows are archived. You can listen anytime. See you next Wednesday at 10 a.m.